Join Sam and Will as they bring the Bible's stories to life through historical evidence and try not to feel out of place in a car garage, all while bringing you Under the Hood.
Welcome to Under the Hood. I'm your host, Will. I'm here alongside Sam. Sam, what are we talking about today?
Today we're going to be talking about a subject that, among people who have opinions on it, is controversial. I'm still on a journey of trying to figure out where I am on this particular issue, but it's fun to talk about, and there's lots of interesting things, and that is the Shroud of Turin, which, if you don't know what that is the Catholic Church for centuries held this up as the burial cloth that wrapped around Jesus's body and left images and blood and different things on it. It's a fascinating thing. Now they've backed away to where they don't definitively say that it's the burial cloth, but they say that it certainly is a reminder of what Christ has done for us. But there's lots of interesting evidence in both directions as to whether or not this thing's authentic.
Yeah, and just even that intro, this is a pretty wild one, because speculative to say the least, but a really interesting one as you start to see the facts start to line up.
That's right. So in the Gospels, we're told that when Jesus died, he was taken down off of the cross, and Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus came, and they wrapped his body in a shroud, and then, you know, aloes and everything else on his body, and they put it in the tomb. And then we're told on the morning of the third day that those same linens were folded up in the tomb when Peter and John rushed into the tomb, and they see these linens. And so the question is, whatever happened to those? And so later on, you know, people began to say, we have this cloth. And in the 1300s is when we can trace it back and go, okay, we know it was in Lyre, France, and the 1300s for sure. Before that, there's lots of conjecture, like, is this thing real? How far does it date back? Is it a medieval forgery? Does it go all the way back to Jesus? And that's what we're going to talk about today. Like, what is the evidence for and what's the evidence against?
Yeah, let's even backtrack, because even when you bring up an idea like the Shroud of Turin, the whole idea of relics is kind of an interesting field to get into, because there's some interesting ones.
Yeah, you go back into previous centuries in the Catholic Church, and I mean, every church had like the bones of the apostles and everything else. And I made a list of some of the different relics that churches throughout the ages have claimed, and some of them, like, they're just humorous. So whenever you hear somebody, oh, there's a relic, we have the burial shroud, like, my instinctive response is, come on, like, I'm not sure I want to buy into this, because here's some examples. The vials of Mary's breast milk is one.
Okay.
So, like, John Calvin, who, you know, Calvinism's named after, he said, he was a reformer, he said, even if Mary had been a cow her whole life, she could not have produced such a quantity. Like, there's that many churches claiming that they have Mary's breast milk at that time in the 1500s. And so he's like, no way possible. Here's some other ones. The holy foreskin.
Oh,
let that sink in for a moment. Like, who's keeping this thing? You know, from birth, Jesus's umbilical cord, the gifts of the Magi, the lance that pierced Christ's side, the crown of thorns, the chalice of the Last Supper. So that's like Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, the chalice, the knife that was used at the Last Supper, presumably, you know, cutting bread and everything else, a swaddling cloths of Jesus, and the nails that were used at the cross. So you go throughout Europe, Christian Europe, and you'd have all of these churches that would have these relics, and the idea was this will draw the crowds because everybody's eager to come and see and to touch it and to believe that some kind of supernatural power or miracle might be transmitted from something that was near to Jesus to these people that are coming to these churches. And so it became a racket, and even today the Catholic Church has said that many of these throughout the centuries have been forgeries and fakes. And so that raises up everybody's antenna and skepticism when someone says we have the burial shroud of Jesus. It's like, you've already proven that so many of these that you've claimed are authentic relics cannot be trusted. So why should I trust you with this one?
Yeah, that's a good place to start. Like, we're not selling anything off of this. We're just interested if, hey, could this possibly be it? We're not for sure about anything, but this is not the money-making grab of, you know, the Holy Roman Empire beforehand.
Right, right. So I had somebody come up to me probably 4 years ago, somebody in our church, and they were like, so what do you think about the Shroud of Turin? And they were really excited. I guess they had just heard a lecture on it. I'd never looked at it, but I immediately, like, anytime anybody mentions relics, I immediately go into, like, skeptical mode. And so I was like, you know, for me, I would not put a lot of weight in it. You know, it's right up there with, like, the Easter Bunny or something. Like, don't put it. And he was like, crushed by that, it turns out.
No.
And later on came and said, like, would you mind looking at it? You love archaeology, you love history. Why don't you look into this? And so I did, and as I was digging, I was expecting it to be like a really brief endeavor, just barely scratching the surface, and it was going to be obvious that this thing was a fake. And the more I scratched, the more stuff I came across that I'm like, how do you make sense of that? Like, if this is a medieval forgery, which is the standard line of academia, how do you make sense of this or this or this? And so that's what we want to present today. We're not taking a position. I've got my own suspicions, but we're going to walk through some of the evidence, and it should at least make you scratch your head and go, that's interesting. And if it's a forgery, man, it's a brilliant forgery.
Okay, with all of that said, where does the real research start on this?
So right about the 1980s, the Catholic Church agreed, because this thing is kept in Turin, Italy. That's how it gets its name, the Shroud of Turin, at a church. And they said, okay, we're going to allow some scholars to come in to conduct some tests. And so in the early 1980s, in 1981, 33 scientists of all different backgrounds, so they're not all Catholic, there's some agnostics, there's some atheists, they come in, and they're looking at this thing, and they produce a report that's like, this thing is pretty remarkable. And I'm just going to read to you from their report. They said, no pigments, paints, dyes, or stains have been found on the fibrils. Now, the reason why that's important is we haven't talked about the shroud yet, but if you take the shroud, it would have been wrapped over top of somebody. So it's not going around in circles like a mummy or anything. It is a long, thin blanket that goes up the backside and then wraps over the head and comes down the front side. And then they would wrap over that shroud, right? And so when they're looking at this, they realize that if you step far enough back, you very clearly see the image of a man on the front side, and then you see the backside of that man, and all of the wounds, the blood stains and everything else that are on the shroud, they all correspond with the wounds that Jesus had. You know, you see wounds in the wrist, which incidentally, we now know, like, you couldn't have been crucified in the hands because they won't hold the weight. And everybody now believes that he was crucified through the wrist. You see the wounds in the feet. You see the wounds at the side where he would have been speared by the Romans. You see a crown of thorns where there's blood around his head. And so, like, everything about this image corresponds to the wounds of Jesus. And there's an image left on there, which, like, okay, if this is a fake or a fraud, you know, they went to such care to make sure that it looks, you know, Middle Eastern, a bearded man, you know, you've got all these things, the same wounds and everything else. And so when they're looking at it, they're like, no pigments, paints, dyes, or stains have been found on the fibrils.
Because the fake one would have just been a guy painting this, thinking, yeah, like, I'm going to trick people.
That's correct.
I kind of know what Jesus looked like. He was a human. I know where his wounds are. So let me just put some paint on a shroud and give it away.
Right. And if you're doing this in the medieval period, like, you're not expecting, oh, in several centuries, they're going to have equipment that can tell
whether this is.
Yeah, you're just going for the appearance. But there's none of this stuff that you should expect to find from a forgery. There are no chemical or physical methods. Now, this is written in 1981. There are no chemical or physical methods known which can account for the totality of the image. That's still true. They had a guy just recently that offered $1 million reward if people could replicate the shroud using technologies available today. Still today, no one has claimed that $1 million. So nothing can explain the totality of the image, nor can any combination of physical, chemical, biological, or medical circumstances explain the image adequately. And so they conclude, thus, the answer to the question of how the image was produced or what produced the image remains a mystery. We can conclude, for now, that the shroud image is that of a real human form of a scourged, that means whipped, crucified man. It is not the product of an artist. The blood stains are composed of hemoglobin. So now they're saying, okay, if this was a forgery, a real dude bled in that thing. A real guy was in that thing. The artwork or the forgery came later, but there's elements of, like, a real guy suffered inside the shroud. And so that set off this thing like, oh my goodness, is this real? And the Catholic Church was real excited. Lots of people are coming from all over the place to see this thing. Like, you almost got to see it one time.
I got really close. I was at the Museum of the Bible. The exhibit opened the next day. It was all set up, ready to go, knocked on the glass. They said, you're not allowed in.
All right. Well, from a distance, you got to see the box that it was in, right? So that's kind of cool. So anyway, everybody gets so excited. For the next 7 years, this report's been circulating like this could be authentic. So they let people come in and take a section off of the side of it to do radiocarbon testing. Now, this is 1988, and everybody's excited, and then there's great disappointment when the results come back and the radiocarbon dating yields a date between 1260 AD and 1390 AD, which is about the same time that it shows up in Lyre, France. And so everybody was like, oh man, it's a forgery. Well, people who worked on this team, initially when they were doing the radiocarbon dating from the shroud, they were supposed to take samples from multiple spots all over the shroud. They were ready to do that. When it came down to taking them, the people who controlled the shroud said, no, you may only take it from this fringe edge of the shroud. Now, the problem with that, and everybody points this out, is this thing had been through fires. It had been repaired. Plus, another thing in ancient relics, when everybody came to see the relic, what did they want to do to it? They wanted to touch it, like, let me touch the hem of Jesus's garment, right? And so they're all grabbing the edges. So the edges of this thing were constantly being repaired. We know for certain that they were repaired in the 1500s. And so a lot of the people were like, hold on a minute, like, you tested from the fringe of it, not the middle of it. We know for certain that the fringes have been repaired. So maybe you're taking fibers of linen that came from a restoration. And so that's not a trustworthy date. But this is where all the contrary, or this is where all the controversy really begins. Because when you do alternative dating methods, so other people, after this point, the Catholic Church is like, no more, you're not going to cut up this thing anymore, we're done, like, you're not testing it anymore. But there are alternative dating methods that they use for these ancient artifacts, right? So one of them is a decay rate analysis of microscopic fibers in the shroud. So if I make something out of linen and I leave it somewhere, there's a set decay rate that linen is going to go through. It decomposes at a set rate. So when they do that and they're like, okay, this would be healthy. How much is it decayed? We can figure out the aging process. And through that scientific analysis, it yields a date range of between 280 BC and 220 AD. So now, remember, the radiocarbon is 1260 to 1390. This is moving that more than 1,000 years, that range more than 1,000 years earlier, saying, and right in the middle of that is exactly where you should expect to find Jesus and his crucifixion, burial, and resurrection, right? Okay, well, that's interesting. That's one of the dates. Then the next dating that I think is interesting is a guy named Ray Rogers, who is a fellow at the Los Alamos National Laboratory, measured the vanillin content. Now, when things decompose, they produce byproducts, right? Vanillin being one of them. And so that is found in the decomposition of flax, which goes into the creation of this shroud. And so when you measure the vanillin content, you get a huge range. But he says that this shroud would have had to have been created between 1,300 years and 3,000 years ago. So let's back up from now. We're talking 700 AD all the way back to 1,000 BC. Okay. So Christ falls in that, but the medieval forgery is outside of that, right? So there's another dating window that would fit Christ but disagrees with the dating of the medieval forgery. Another one, they did infrared laser spectroscopy, test of cellulose degradation, similar, and that yielded dates between 700 BC and 300 AD. What falls in between those dates?
What we're looking for.
Right, that's Jesus. Certainly not medieval 1260 to 1390. We go to another one, and they find that in the shroud, there's a 3/1 herringbone pattern that when you go back and you look, where does this pattern emerge? Well, you find that in 1st and 2nd century fabrics from Syria and Egypt. And to preserve this thing, they had kept the shroud on top of another fabric. And in the last couple of decades, they removed the fabric from the back to see what the stitching looks like on the back. And there was a unique pattern of stitching that was found on the back of the shroud that's only been found one other place in all of history. And that was on Masada, which is one of the mountains that Herod built in Israel in the 1st century. Hmm. So you've got this herringbone pattern that fits. You've got the back stitch that matches Israel first century. Another dating, they did a study to test the tensile strength of this thing, and it pointed to 372 AD, and they gave a margin of error of 400 years, so plus or minus 400 years. Well, what falls in that? Again, Jesus' crucifixion. What does not fall in that is the medieval hypothesis that says radiocarbon dating came 1,000 years later, right? And so even when they did X-ray dating and they compared how the linen of the shroud compares to other linens that we know the dates of, it falls far more in line with 2,000-year-old shroud than any other dating from ancient relics or even dating to the medieval period. So these other dating hypotheses and studies and everything else, they come forward and they all match first century. Like, that would be compatible with first century. None of them match medieval times.
Okay, so we've talked about kind of the science element, but you said the first time we hear about this thing is in the 1300s. Is that true?
Yeah, so a lot of people will say that the first time this emerges in the historical record is Lyre, France in the 1300s. But let's take a step back and let me take you to some other historical sources that do make you scratch your head and go like, is this the same thing? So let's walk through them. In 544 AD, many believe that this same shroud was kept at a place called Edessa, which is like where Armenia is now. And so their ancient writings claim that the first century Armenian king Abgar V owned an image that was produced by Jesus. And so it's like, okay, they have some kind of lore going on that there was a shroud or an image that was produced by Jesus. But we do know this from writings that when Edessa beat the Persians in 544 AD, and they're attributing the reason why they won, this is what they said. They attributed their victory to a, quote, divinely created image which human hands had not made. And the monk at that time over Edessa, a guy named Theodosius, was called a deacon of the image of Christ. So in Edessa, in the 500s AD, there's something about an image of Christ that was created by Jesus, not with human hands. And the monk that is kind of in charge of this city is known as the deacon of the image of Christ. Like, something's going on there with an image of Christ that's really precious to them. So you fast forward 4 centuries, and in 943 AD, you get the emperor of Constantinople who comes to Edessa and says, I'm going to conquer you unless you are willing to sell me this relic with the image of Christ on it for 12,000 silver coins. And he calls it, what he wants is, quote, the most prized relic, the mandilion, the holy towel. And mandilion means cloth. And so he's coming to Edessa. Now, remember, Edessa in 544 is like, we won the battle thanks to this image. 400 years later, you get, you know, Constantinople emperor coming being like, give me the image or I'm going to conquer you, but I'll let you live if you give me 12,000 silver coins for this. And they're calling it the most prized relic, the holy towel. So now it's like, okay, what in the world? But we find ancient artwork, and you can take an image of this painting where you see the great exchange. Now, the emperor receives the shroud from Edessa, and you see them handing it off, and it's, what do you notice about it? It is a very long, which is exactly like the shroud. It's a long image, and in the middle of it, you notice that face that's kind of leaping off the page?
Yes.
What is that about?
I don't know.
That's a burial shroud with the image of Jesus on it. And you notice that the emperor's grabbing hold of it, presumably, and there's like an intimate hug. This is a sacred thing. But what else could that be? This is a shroud with a person's face. He doesn't have a body. It's just the face coming off of this shroud. So that kind of confirms in an image what the emperor of Constantinople had received from Edessa going back to the 900s. Now, remember, this thing's not supposed to have been created until 1260 AD. So in 900s, what in the world is this thing doing in existence? Is it the same thing? Okay, now let's fast forward to something called the Prey Codex. And the Prey Codex is something where it's like written records in that time in the world. It would be called a codex. And Prey is not like, oh, Prey, I'm praying to the Lord. It's named after a guy whose last name was Prey. and it's Hungarian. And this dates to 1192 and at latest 1195. Everybody agrees on this date. And it's a lot of writings, but it includes an image where you find the women and the apostles burying Jesus in a shroud, right? You see that image where, you know, in like Catholic iconography, yeah, they have the halos around their head and they're putting Jesus into this shroud. Now, one of the things you notice that's really weird about the image of Jesus is his hands are crossed, right? And here, I want you to notice a couple of things. He doesn't have any thumbs. Do you notice that?
Yeah.
Okay. So I want you to pay attention to that. And if you zoom in on that image, you see blood, particularly above his right eye. Okay. You notice that?
Yes.
Now, when you come to the next image, you see an image of the shroud where Jesus is no longer there, but you have an angel pointing to the shroud. This is the Praecodex talking about the morning of the resurrection, where the linens are left behind, the angel's pointing at it, and he's telling the women, he's not here, he's risen. Now, there's a couple of things that I want you to notice about this shroud, which shouldn't exist before 1260 if the radiocarbon dating's right. It's herringbone patterned, okay? I want you to notice that.
Okay.
And I want you to also notice that there are three holes, poker holes, that are burned into this thing. Now, this dates to 1195. Now, let's go and we look at the shroud. Remember, there are no thumbs in the Praecodex.
Okay.
When you go to the shroud, what do you notice about the image of Jesus? Does he have any thumbs?
No.
His thumbs are folded inward. So the Praecodex is telling us that there was a shroud where there are no thumbs visible. When you zoom in on the Shroud of Turin, you notice that there's a density of blood over his right eye, just like you would see in the Praecodex. And what's really fascinating, and this is like fingerprints, right? This is a thumbprint. You have these burn holes in it that go one, two, and then three down, right? One, and then three down. They make almost like a seven or an L. Then you take, that's on the Praecodex. Then you go to the Shroud of Turin, and what do you notice on the Shroud of Turin?
The same burn
holes. The exact burn holes and the exact shape and the exact design. And so the chances that this Praecodex just got really lucky, right?
Yeah.
Not so likely. So this is talking about the shroud prior to the dates that are proposed by this radiocarbon thing. So, and this is where we go, and this is conjecture. Do with this what you will, but I think it's a crazy coincidence, okay? In 1204, in a letter to Pope Innocent III, there was a guy named Theodore Ducas who's writing that the French crusaders stole, quote, the linen in which our Lord Jesus Christ was wrapped after his death and before the resurrection. So in 1204 AD, in a letter, there's somebody saying, we had this thing.
Yeah.
The linen in which Christ's body was wrapped was stolen. And he speculated that it was taken to Athens. Okay, so I want you to get that. Stolen by French crusaders, landed eventually in Athens. It's the thing that was wrapped around the body of Jesus. Well, now we finally get to Lirey, France, okay? In 1355, the shroud's on display at Lirey. This is where history's like, oh, we can all trace it back to this day. And the family seal, the Lirey badge, if you look at it, it's the shroud. You can see this long image that would be the image of the shroud with a man's backside on one side and the man's front side on the other. This is the Shroud of Turin that it's capturing there. And so the question is it the same shroud? And so here's the wild coincidence, if you believe in coincidences. While at Lirey, the shroud was owned by a guy named Geoffroy de Charnay, and his wife, Jean de Vergy, was the descendant of Othon de la Roche. You don't need to remember those names. Okay, but you need to know that he was a French commander in the Fourth Crusade. Remember what the letter said to the Pope?
Stolen.
A French crusader stole the shroud. Now, all of a sudden, the ones who have it and their family badge is the Shroud of Turin. Turns out that their family lineage comes out of French crusaders. And oh, by the way, he oversaw the district of Blanchenay where the shroud was kept. And in 1204 AD, he becomes the first Frankish Duke of Athens.
Okay.
And so remember, French crusader took it, and now I think it's in Athens. It turns out this guy's a French crusader who becomes the Duke of Athens. And so sure enough, we can trace out, going back all the way to, to 544 AD, and you can make a pretty good case that all of those historical records are talking about the very same shroud. So now is the point where, like, originally I'm thinking there's no chance that this is authentic. But the more and more I come across these kinds of things, the studies on dating, the historical tracing through all of those centuries that are like, I don't have an answer for that. Like, and they seem pretty compelling. That's when it started opening up to me, like, maybe there's a shot that this thing is real. So you have to have an open mind.
I mean, this is pretty wild. I mean, my part of the show is I do no research, and I'm kind of just here to listen and to ask questions. And so far, I mean, not knowing much about this coming into this, it's pretty wild how, like you said, like you promised, and I didn't know if you were going to fulfill on that promise as the evidence starts to stack up. Like, you have the dating of it, and at first you're like, oh, that's interesting. But then also then you start to get to the historicity of it, and now we can kind of track it. And there's Hungarian things, and there's Edessa, and there's a French commander heading into Athens. And all of a sudden you're like, okay, I'm not a believer yet, but I'm way closer to that than I was starting. So let's get back to the shroud itself. What do we see with it?
Yeah, so the goal, by the way, is not to make you a believer. Like, my faith does not rest on whether or not the Shroud of Turin is a real thing. But it's kind of like what the Catholic Church says. It doesn't matter if it's real, because when you look at it, it's a reminder of what the Lord suffered.
Hmm.
And if it is real, like, let me just say this, that somebody went to the shroud, and over all the places where there are blood stains, and it's real blood with real hemoglobin, it's type AB, this is a real person.
Huh.
They highlighted in the image all the places where there are blood. And this is something most people don't know, that when you were scourged back in the ancient world, it wasn't like they just stuck with your back.
Okay.
Like, you can see blood marks that going from his feet, up his shins, thighs, chest, rib cage, neck, head, arms, and then straight down his back, buttocks, the back of his thigh, the back of his knees. Like, you were flogged everywhere all over your body. And the wounds that you see, and we said this before, like, you see where the blood pools at his feet. Why? Because a nail went through his feet. And you can see there's blood pooled at his hands. The person that was in this shroud had a wound in his hands and had a wound in his side and had a wound around his head. All of these being the wounds that were suffered by Christ. But when you look at how mutilated the Romans left their victims, this is actually a pretty accurate representation of what somebody would have suffered. If this isn't Jesus, it's still an accurate representation of what their scourged victims would have looked like. And that's enough. When you think that the God of the universe, regardless of whether this is authentic or not, went through this for us, that's really humbling. You know, Isaiah says, by his stripes we're healed, and it's talking about those scourged wounds. Another thing, like, This wasn't just a happy accident, because all of these wounds correspond to the crucifixion. But crucifixion as a punishment was abolished in 337 AD by Constantine. So it's not like they accidentally got another crucified victim from 1,000 years after Constantine banned it. Like, that tradition stopped. So it's either an unbelievably clever forgery that was super advanced beyond our ability to replicate or understand, or this is authentic. And one of the other things that's really fascinating, when someone died in first century Israel and you wrapped them in the shroud, and by the way, Israeli burial customs are pretty unique. Like, they wouldn't have done this in France or Italy. When they throw the shroud over you, they wrap you up and they leave you in the shroud until your body decomposes and you're nothing but bones. And then they remove the bones and they would put it in what's called an ossuary box. We've talked about this before on a different episode. There are no decomposition stains on the Shroud of Turin, which means, yes, some guy suffered wildly, probably with enough blood loss to kill him in this thing, and yet we know he didn't stay dead inside the shroud, because there's zero evidence of human decomposition that would have ruined this thing with all the chemicals and everything else that the body unleashes during decomposition. So whoever was in this thing did not stay dead inside this thing. That fits as well, right?
Yeah.
Because our Savior is not a crucified Savior. He's a risen Savior as well. And a couple of other things. So let's go through, you know, the blood stains, they correspond to the images that we should expect for Jesus's wounds. There's a crown of thorns. That was totally unique to Jesus. Not everybody got a crown of thorns. Remember, they're mocking him as being the king of the Jews, so they put the crown of thorns on him. That wouldn't be ordinary. The researchers found real blood blood type AB. And here's something that's interesting. The blood was on the shroud before the image. So when you look microscopically, the blood is soaked into the fibers of this thing, and then the image that you see of the man is on top of that. So somebody, if it's a forgery, would have had to have put blood in all perfectly all the right spots and then come back with the forgery that goes over top of the blood wounds, which would be really difficult. And here's the other thing. In all of this, the images have no brush strokes, no dyes, no chemicals, no scorching. It wasn't burned. And one of the crazy things, like if I'm laying down on a shroud and somebody drapes the top of it over me, which side is going to have the heavier stains? The back, because your weight is pressing into it, right? But this that's evenly distributed atop the surface level of the entire linen, which is weird, right? We'll get to that in a minute, why that is. It's not affected by weight distribution. And so most of the people who have analyzed how in the world could these images have been made without brush strokes and everything else, and it's so tiny, the layer of this image is so tiny that the only way that they can replicate it is with intense light radiation that only hits the very surface of the linen. It doesn't go down deep into it. So light radiation, I mean, they wouldn't have been able to do that in 1260 AD. And so then the other part of this is we talked about there's no decomposition stains. This person didn't stay dead. And then one of the other ones, there's bilirubin in this blood that helps to keep the stains red, that some scientists believe. And bilirubin is something that's produced when the body is in extreme shock, you're really, really sick, or you're being tortured and you're in deep distress. Your body will produce that comes out in the blood. And that's what they believe is present in the blood on the shroud. It's indicative of a person who was being tortured. So this isn't a stage actor. You know, it's not somebody who's, you know, pricking their finger months at a time, dripping blood. This person was in distress as this was happening.
And even again, we're not trying to prove the shroud is a real thing. But even with the idea to remember that Jesus Christ did become human with real blood in his veins is also something that we tend to pass over sometimes.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's a real human element in this. When he went to the cross, he wasn't just like, oh, I'm God, this doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
You know, this was something that he suffered, and he suffered mightily, but he did so because he loved you. And so people are obsessed with this thing. They're always looking at it. And one of the things that they notice is over the eyes, there are these tiny little circles that somebody came up and said, I think those are coins. And so they took really, really close-up microscopic images of those areas that are emblazoned onto the shroud. And they began to theorize, we believe that this is the reflection of a Pilate coin. So Pontius Pilate, being the Roman governor who crucified Jesus, in 30 AD, he had his own coin minted that had like a shepherd's crook on it. It looks kind of like a P. And the beginning of the word Kaiser, which is Caesar, and you see a K-A-I. And so when you go to the top of this image, now this one was the biggest stretch for me because I'm like straining my eyes. And I can kind of see where there's like a C, an A, and an I. I see a circle where this shepherd thing would go around, which we can enhance here for you. But when they sent this thing off to experts, right? This went out to the Department of Electrical Engineering at the Virginia Polytechnic Institute and State University, and they concluded the shroud did indeed contain a faint image of the Pilate coin. And so now in the first century Israel, when someone was dead, you would put coins over their eyes to make sure that their eyelids stayed shut. And somebody was looking at this and they were like, I think that's the reverse image of the Pilate coin. And so you can look at that. If you were to overlay them, you can kind of see what it's talking about, particularly the KAI near the top and then the circle where the staff is. So I'll let you make that argument. So a couple other things that are evidences for this, take them for what they're worth. So on the knees of the shroud where Jesus's body or the image of this man would have been, they found travertine aragonite limestone dust particles that were fairly unique. And when they went to find what region these would come from, guess where they come from? Israel, Syria, and in particularly in the Old City, where they took samples from the Damascus Gate of Jerusalem, where Jesus would have likely been near. And it's an exact match to those type of travertine aragonite, limestone, dust particles. It's a match for that.
Is that something you could fake?
So if I'm making this thing and they're saying that this was a forgery from Italy or France,
yeah,
you would have to go travel and be like, all right, well, let's get a pilot coin here and let's go yeah. get some dust here. And another thing, they did a study in March of 2024, so more recent, where they found that the materials, the flax that was used to make the linen of the shroud is consistent with what's grown in the Middle East, not in Europe. And so if I'm forging this thing, I'm literally getting on a ship. I'm going to Israel, and I'm like, all right, I better get a pilot coin. I need to get some dust particles from this region. I got to get some flax to make the linen from this region.
And then you make the linen.
Yeah, right. Then you make the linen. Then you go back, and then you create the forgery in Europe. And so, like, a lot of this is just... they went to incredible lengths to create a forgery, I'll say, right?
Yeah.
If this is a forgery. And so then beyond that, like coming to an end, Italy's National Agency for New Technologies and Energy, they spent 5 years attempting to create a replica of the shroud. And the team of researchers concluded this. This is a direct quote from their report. They said, "It appears unlikely a forger may have done this image with technologies available in the Middle Ages or earlier." And they said the only way that you could create this image that they could find was using a state-of-the-art excimer lasers with short bursts of ultraviolet light blasting onto the raw linen. And they said that this the image's penetration down into the linen is only 0.7 micrometers or 0.000028 inches. So this thing is so precise. The only way you could do that, they couldn't use paint pigments. They couldn't figure out how to do it. The only thing that would do it was short bursts of this light. So physicist Paolo Di Lazzaro came along and he tested it and he said that the ultraviolet light that was necessary for this, quote, exceeds the maximum power released by all ultraviolet light sources available today. And he added that pulses having durations shorter than 1/40 billionth of a second and intensities on the order of several billion watts would be necessary to produce this. Now, you're not finding that in 1260 to 1390 AD in medieval Europe. Like, you're just not finding it. And so then that invites your imagination to say, okay, let's say that really is the way that this image was made and that the shroud really is authentic. Well, that means that at the resurrection, after the blood is already on the shroud, something happens in that shroud that sends pulsating ultraviolet light that sears an image into this thing. And you know how in movies, like, I mean, granted, this is all speculation, but you know how in movies where a lot of times you'll see the empty tomb and it's like this blinding light yeah. that bursts forth, like this energy, this new life is bursting forth. Well, if this is authentic, it turns out that's exactly what happened. Short bursts of unbelievably powerful light actually seared the image of the man into the shroud. Either that or it's a medieval forgery.
I mean, all of that is super wild. I mean, we're talking micromillimeters, we're talking light, we're talking Paolo's evidence. So if you were looking at all of this, what's the evidence against this?
So the strongest evidence against this remains the radiocarbon dating that was done in 1988. That will be the biggest, strongest evidence that's proposed against it. Now, in addition to that, about 4 or 5 decades after this thing came into the spotlight in the 1300s, there was a bishop, Bishop Pierre d'Arcis, and he came out and said that he believed that this was a clever forgery. So from the 1300s, you have somebody who's around decades after, everybody's going wild, we have the shroud of Jesus, and you have a bishop that comes forth and says, I think this is a fake. So people quote him a lot. And the last one is something that happened in the last couple of decades where someone found a technique that using acid, you could make linen have an image that looks like this, but it does not match all the crazy characteristics that we've been talking about. So if you Googled it, you would be able to find, you know, the acid created Shroud of Turin and look at it versus the other one. But when you consider the burn holes, the Praeco text, going back, the pilot coin, the dust particles, all the dating, the fact that all this is human blood, that it's got bilirubin, that it's got all these different things that all match the wounds of Jesus, like, this is far more credible than I ever thought it to be before I researched it. And so, like, I'm not here saying you must believe this. This is core tenet of the yeah. church. I'm just saying that for something that I initially, when I used to think of this, was like, oh, that's got to be a fraud. It's like all the other relics. I'm here to tell you, after looking into it, there's a lot of evidence that I can't explain away that makes me think that there's a really good chance that this is legitimate and that this was the burial shroud of our Savior.
Yeah, and the beautiful part about this is not just the shroud itself, but it points us back to the actual act of crucifixion and resurrection of Jesus.
That's it.
It points us back to the fact that Jesus did become human, that he was a man who had blood running through his veins, that that blood was shed in excruciating ways.
That's right. And I think that's one of the things that the Catholic Church is right on. They don't insist that this thing is 100% authentic, but they do insist that this should be a healthy reminder of what our God was willing to suffer for us. Because whether or not the shroud is real, the suffering of Jesus is real. And in him we find our salvation, because he would pay that extreme of a cost for us.
Okay, final question. Percentage that you think it's real. Not to bet any salvation on, no kids are dying over this, but what would you say right now, quick?
I keep moving, like initially zero, but I would say now, I have a skeptical nature about me, so I'd say I'm probably 75, 80%. There's just some things about it that I'm like, I don't know how else to explain them if it's not authentic. But if science came out, you know, next year and there was definitive proof that this thing was a total forgery, it wouldn't shake my faith at all.
So all I really need to do is get whoever controls this thing to finally take a little cut from the middle and do some dating.
Yeah, that would be nice.
So if you ever see this video, do it.
What about you?
I'm higher than that because I'm not skeptical by nature. So I'm at 90.
Okay. I think that's fair. And like I said, we don't have to bet our salvation on it. So, and people at home will make up their own opinions.
Yeah. Let us know in the comments what you think. Give us a number. And while you're commenting, don't forget to like and subscribe. And maybe even share this with a friend.
Thank you so much for watching. Join us next time as we go under the hood of another story from the Bible.